Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the August 2010 issue of Boys Life magazine. And we're going to begin with our first article from Letters from Dear Pedro. First letter is from Roy Everhart from Naples, Florida. And he asked Pedro, "Dear Pedro, your comics are really funny. If you add any new characters, you should add a hippopotamus named Steve." Pedro responds, "I knew a hippopotamus once, Roy. He was certainly funny looking. And man, could he put away the groceries, if you know what I mean. I don't need the competition." Then from Thomas Pablo Gayagoy from Colorado Springs, Colorado. "Dear Pedro, I always read a true story of scouts in action, and those stories help me think that I can make a difference. I've been thinking about a career in the medical field just because it gives me a chance to help people directly. So thanks for everything." Pedro responds, "I'm glad to hear we're inspiring you, TP. After all, a scout is helpful." Then from Pratik Paul from Darnestown, Maryland. "Dear Mega Awesome Pedro, I enjoy the collecting column in where readers share their collections, and I always get inspired to start one myself. Do you have any collections?" "I've had many collections over the years, Pratik, but they were all edible, so they didn't last very long." From Austin Youngblood in Charlotte, North Carolina. "Dear Pedro, I have to say it's been awesome reading Hitch and Rack all these years as a scout. Boys Life has always been a great read for me. But do you have any advice for a scout transitioning into an adult leader?" Pedro, "Remember all the things you learned as a scout and as a role model, Austin. You should do just fine." From Christopher Marsh in Groton, Massachusetts. "Hey, Pedro, I enjoyed the article Smooth Sailing in the March issue. It made the sea base look really interesting. Our troop is going to Philmont this summer, and I was wondering if you could recommend any activities." "Be kind to any pet burros you come across, Christopher. I remember my days on the trail and the panniers on my back." And from Grave U in Charlotte, North Carolina. "Dear Pedro, I'm a Girl Scout, but I love Boys Life and read almost every word of it. I admire girls who write to you, so I'm writing too. I hope the boss isn't too hard on you, and I hope you're okay." Pedro, "I like to hear from all our readers, Grace. Male burros are tough and adaptable, hard-headed and thick-skinned, according to the boss. I'm always okay, as long as I get fed, and I never miss a meal." And from Chris Mitchell in Newark, Delaware. "Dear Pedro, is the boss really that mean? You complain about him every month, but has he ever fired you? If he ever does, I'll send you a sympathy card and an alfalfa milkshake." "The boss isn't mean, Chris, just needy, as in he needs me to work. That puts us at odds occasionally. An alfalfa milkshake would be just the thing to perk me up, though." And finally, from Michael Corrado in Medford, Massachusetts. "Hey, Pedro, your comics just keep getting funnier and funnier. You rock. Tell the boss I said hi." "Hey, boss, Michael says I'm getting funnier and that I rock. The boss says nobody's going to be laughing if I don't start rocking down the hall with the mailbox. So I better quit typing and commence to toting. See you next month." All right, next article, we'll go on to Falling Rock. Actually, we'll go to history. The Big Blow Up on page 9. The largest forest fire in American history burned more than 3 million acres in northern Idaho, western Montana, and eastern Washington in August 1910. Known as the Big Blow Up or Big Burn, it started when strong winds whipped many small forest fires into an enormous two-day firestorm. more than 10,000 men helped alongside United States Forest Service Rangers, lumberjacks, miners, and townspeople, some far away from far away as Seattle, Washington, arrived with shovels, picks, and other primitive tools. After they could do little to stop the fierce blaze, cool air and rains eventually did the trick. 86 people died, and many towns were wiped out. Burning at nearly 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, the blaze destroyed enough timber to build a city the size of Chicago. The Rangers of the United States Forest Service became heroes in the eyes of the nation that summer. Afterward, they received much-needed support to strengthen their firefighting skills and knowledge. The big blow-up also helped kickstart the idea that some parts of the natural world should be protected from all threats, not just fire, but also people. And here it has a big picture of the destruction in the timber, all the timber that was felled caused by the fire. And down below it does have a picture of an actual burning fire. And the caption reads, "Up in smoke. More than 100,000 wilderness wildfires clear 4 to 5 million acres of land each year in the United States." And then followed by the big blow-up, devastated towns throughout the area. Below, one-third of Wallace, Idaho, burned to the ground. Now, Ask Us Anything, page 11. And here we have a picture of Steve and Jenny. And the first question is, "I like spending time with my uncle, but he's a smoker. I don't want to be exposed to secondhand smoke. What should I do?" Steve responds, "Facts first. The United States Surgeon General reports that secondhand smoke can cause death and disease in young people. And 60% of United States children ages 3 to 11, some 22 million kids, are exposed to it. There's no question smoking can really be hard to quit. But you can and should ask your uncle not to light up around you, or at least go outside." And Jenny? "Both my parents smoked, and I knew from health class that it was not only bad for their lungs, but mine as well. My sister and I tried lecturing him, showing them pictures of smoke-ravaged lungs, but that only made them mad. So my sister and I came up with a plan. We figured out how much cigarettes would cost them over the next 10 years. Cost of one pack of cigarettes times number of packs smoked per day times 365 times 10. The number was pretty shocking. More than $20,000. We posted it on the fridge. It made them conscious of the fact that smoking doesn't just affect them. It affects our entire family. That's a good chunk of college tuition. Eventually, they got the point and kicked the cigs to the curb." Now for Boyd's Life Headliners, page 12. His name is Davin. The names are Davin and Jaquan Sabaya. They were both born April 1st, 2002. Their hometown, Menlo Park, California. Scout rank, Cub Scout, Pack 565, Menlo Park. They made headlines in July 2009 when the twins and their parents hiked to the summit of California's Mount Whitney, the highest peak in the contiguous United States, 14,494 feet. At age 7, the brothers climbed the 22-mile round-trip route unassisted, meaning they walked the whole distance and carried their own packs. The scoop? In March 2010, the twins climbed Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa, braving rain, snow, and illness to hike to the summit of 19,341 feet. Other hobbies: sailing, skiing, surfing, rafting, tap dancing, soccer, baseball, basketball, Legos, acting, chess, midget car racing. And their advice? Davin suggests you take a lot of water when you go hiking. Jaquan says, "Don't give up. Have a positive attitude and perseverance." And it has pictures here of the boys. Looks like they're relaxing on one of their hiking trips. And then on another trip, they have a good view of another mountain area. And then they both have their Cub Scout uniforms on, giving us a nice salute. Good job, boys. Next article, next page, is CampingMax.com. Consistently the lowest prices. Get prepared. As a proud sponsor of Global Scouting Activities, CampingMax.com extends a discount of up to 25% or more to everyone involved in scouting. Fill your backpack with lots of yummy food from Mountain House. Mountain House offers tasty, easy-to-prepare nutritional meals, snacks, and even desserts. Scouts get 10% off Mountain House foods. See all the choices at CampingMax.com. You'll need a mess kit to eat your fine Mountain House grub, and this one from Wenzel has it all. After you fill your tummy, wash it down with fresh filtered water from the mountain stream that you've been hiking along. Katadin makes it easy with their one-pound microfilter featuring quick connect fittings that will attach to most one-quarter hydration packs. This filter system is a necessity for any hiker. Of course, it has pictures of the filter and of the eating bowl. Continuing, start with the 7-pound High Peak Hyperlite 3-season tent. It's ideal for two adults plus storage, all types of camping, and it includes a full rain cover. Add the internal framed, fully adjustable Pocatello pack from High Peak. Built to last with durable Rytop nylon and a manufacturer's lifetime warranty. This pack extends to 5,000 cubic inches with too many features to list here. Finally, add the High Peak Cascade 20LD sleeping bag. This 20-degree rated bag weighs only 3 pounds and accommodates up to a 6'2" hiker. Our collapsible camp stools weigh less than 1 pound, are easy to carry, and come in various colors. These Eddie Bauer brand telescoping hiking poles make hiking a breeze. Made of durable aluminum alloy with rubber tips, colors listed on the site. Digging and picking are a cinch with this 23-inch long shovel that comes apart to carry in its own 10-inch kit bag, made of forged steel to last. And finally, this 2,200 cubic inch pack with a large main compartment and two-side zippered pocket has plenty of room for your gear. Plus, it comes with the Everest lifetime guarantee. Choose from red, navy, royal blue, black, dark green, or digital camo. Well, that's all we have from CampingMax.com. Our next article is entitled, From the Skyline to the Sea. California scouts don't let a lack of experience get in their way as they backpack from a mountain all the way to the ocean. And here it has a picture here of some scouts doing what they need to do to get prepared for the trip. They have a map here that they're going over, and some boys look like they're practicing coming down a little hill here. Well, let's begin the reading. When scouts from two California troops set off down the skyline to the sea trail last summer, most of the guys had little backpacking experience. Some of them had been on shorter trips, but none had been on a trek like this one, 30 miles through the redwood forest of the Santa Cruz Mountains for 5 days until the trail ended at the edge of the Pacific Ocean. Their journey began at a 2,600-foot elevation and ended at sea level, and the scouts from Troop 317 in Visalia, California, and Troop 314 in Coors Gold, California, completed it like pros, with only a few blisters and some sore muscles to show for it. Their secret? Plenty of preparation and plenty of teamwork. Here's how they did it. 1. Start thinking about it early, like more than just a few days before you leave. If you want to have fun on a backpacking trek, you have to start early. Some might call it being prepared. This includes getting in shape. A good way to get and stay in shape is to play sports. Matt Bravante, a 12-year-old star scout from Troop 317, plays water polo and soccer. All the running he does for soccer keeps his heart in excellent shape. The swimming required in water polo exercises just about every muscle in his body. I was ready in pretty good shape, Matt says. Some of the scouts with less experience on long backpacking trips participated in a couple of practice hikes to give them an idea of what to expect on the skyline to the sea trail. Those helped a lot, says 12-year-old life scout Cody Gordon from Troop 317. It would have been a lot harder on us if we hadn't done those hikes. 2, know where you're going. The guys knew almost exactly what to expect on their trek before they even hit the trail. Weather reports call for clear skies and mild temperatures, and those reports proved to be accurate. They knew that during this trip they would gain about 2,500 feet in elevation, but they would also lose 5,100 feet. That means much of the time would be spent walking downhill, which made it even more imperative to have shoes that fit just right. If it's too big, Cody says, your foot will slide into the front of the shoe and you'll get a black and blue toe. Their plan called for a mix of short days, just 2.8 miles on the first day, and long ones, 9.8 miles on day three, to space out the particularly grueling sections. Number three, know how to pack. Ever since you were a baby, your parents told you to share your toys. Now's the time to thank them, because sharing on a backpacking trip can save you tons of weight and tons of aches. Think about it. There's no reason for every person to carry a cooking stove, fuel, pots, pans, and food, right? Troops 317 and 314 divided their stuff so that one person would carry a stove that several of them would share that evening. Someone else would carry the cookware, and a different hiker would carry the fuel and food. We each had a partner, and you pack with them, says Danny Long. Cora, a 14-year-old life scout from Troop 314, I decided to bunk with someone else to make it even easier. Number four, perform a service project. While walking along the trail, the boys came across enough trash, including a washing machine tossed from a nearby highway, to inspire them to spring into action. Of course, it has a big picture here of not only the things they practice, but you have someone, one of the scouts looking through their toes, checking to make sure his shoes are right. Other ones setting up their tents, and a variety of things to get prepared for this long trip. Continuing with number four, an assistant scoutmaster pulled out a spare trash bag and slung it over his shoulder. For the next few days, anybody who spotted a piece of trash would drop it into the bag. They dropped off one bag of trash at a ranger station at the halfway point and the rest on their way home. Except for the washing machine, they let that one be. Number five, leave no trace. Throughout their trip, the boys camped on existing campsites and walked only on established trails. They planned their meals so that pretty much every bit of food got consumed instead of tossed. And they took only pictures, leaving behind the plants, rocks, and other natural items that make the Santa Cruz Mountains so unique. The trail isn't at all smooth walking. At this spot, the boys have to traverse a small rock field. This is one of the pictures they have here. Another part of the picture, they have, by backpacking 32 miles, the boys take one of the final steps earning the backpacking merit badge. Number six, drink lots of water. For the most part, the scouts on this trip are used to being around high altitudes, so the elevation on the skyline to the sea trail didn't have much of an effect on them. And they did much of their walking under the shade of a redwood forest, so there wasn't always direct sun beating down on them. But regardless of the altitude and the heat, backpacking is hard work. Even if you don't feel thirsty, you should still drink plenty of water. I drank a lot more than I thought I would, Matt says. Then I had to keep going to the bathroom. Number seven, eat good food. Just because you're traveling light doesn't mean you can skimp on food. Food is fuel for the body, and the harder you're working, the more you need to eat. The California Scouts planned their meals in advance, then brought the ingredients they need for each dish. Ramen noodles, macaroni and cheese, protein bars, and trail mix were the most popular foods. Don't be afraid to treat yourself to a sweet dish one night if you can handle carrying the extra ingredients. One night we had pancakes, Danny says. Number eight, enjoy the sights. Backpacking shouldn't be about merely surviving. It should be about thriving in the wilderness and developing a better appreciation of the natural world. On day four of the trip, the boys hiked straight up a steep incline that ran right alongside a spectacular waterfall. The water was so close they could almost reach out and touch it. It was like a waterfall in Hawaii, Danny says. As we were climbing up, you could actually feel some of the mist. It was really refreshing. Number nine, know how to pass the time. There's always plenty of downtime on a backpacking trip. Sometimes the boys would arrive at their next campsite in the early afternoon, eat an early dinner, and then just wait for the sun to go down so they could go to sleep. However, it is during these times that some of the best memories can be made. It might sound weird, but one of the things I'll remember most about the trip was the card games, Matt says. It was a great way to pass the time. Paperwork for a backpacking trip. And number 10. Appreciate what you've just accomplished. Near the end of their 30-mile trek, the boys finally caught sight of their destination, the Pacific Ocean. Whew, we're really tired, but when we saw the ocean, we were like, wow, we're really almost there, Cody says. When they actually reached the point where a trail spills out into the beach, the scouts dumped their packs and plunged into the ocean without changing clothes. After realizing how cold the water was, they quickly returned to the beach and dried off. We had decided the night before that we were going to do a big victory plunge, Matt says, but the water was freezing. It has a caption here. Paperwork for a backpacking trip. When it comes to backpacking, keeping good paperwork is part of being prepared. You need a trip plan, an emergency plan, and a duty roster. Don't worry, we've got you covered. Go to boyslife.org/backpacking forms for some ready-to-use forms for your troop. Our next article, entitled Hitting the Bullseye. Like many scouts, Eagle Scout Chris Lumman and Life Scouts and twins Daniel and Sean McLaughlin are into archery. The difference is that these guys have their eyes on a big prize, the Olympics. Chris, Daniel, and Sean are among only 30 archers, 12 boys and 18 girls, who have made the USA Archery Junior Dream Team. The team is made up of the best and most promising archers in the country between the ages of 12 and 18. The boys travel four times a year to spend a week at the Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista, California. The training is intense, but the guys believe it will pay off. The coolest thing was going out to the training center for my first time, Chris says. Chris 15 of Troop 1459 in Milton, Georgia, and Crew 87 in Alpharetta, Georgia. Coach Kissick Lee, the Olympic head coach, really liked how I was shooting and how I improved over that week. It's really hard to make the team because they push you hard. Targeted training. The program includes weight training to strengthen their backs and chests. Cardio exercises like running and cycling give them stamina. And stretching routines like yoga help the guys control their breathing and strengthen the core of their bodies. Chris says that in an important competition, your heart rate goes up and you start to breathe fast. All this can mess up a perfect shot, so they learn how to slow down everything and concentrate. Chris realized he liked archery after trying it at scout camp 4 years ago. After that, I got a bow and started shooting. He practices a lot on the full archery range in his backyard. Along with Sean and Daniel, Chris is looking forward to the next step, being accepted to the resident athlete program, where he'll live with the other athletes and practice with them daily. The dynamic duo. Sean and Daniel, 16 of Troop 941 in Westchester, Ohio, started archery separately. Sean was introduced to it at Cub Scout camp and then began working with a coach at a local archery club. Sean kept coming home from practice and telling stories about how much fun archery was. I just decided to try it one day, Daniel says. After he placed third in his first national competition, he was hooked. I love shooting. It's therapeutic for me. It relaxes me, he says. I would almost rather go shoot my bow than do anything else. Sean enjoys archery very much. He used it in his Eagle Scout project. He built 18 target stands for the 2009 National Field Archery Championships. I wanted to incorporate archery into my project because of my strong interest in it and the chance to help the sport grow, Sean says. I enjoyed the fact that I was going to have a real use for the project when I shot the course, and so would a lot of other people for many, many years. It has pictures here of Daniel, Sean, and Chris, and then a picture of a caption of Chris aiming and shooting his bow at the target. Eagle Scout Chris Lumman, USA Archery Junior Dream Team member, is aiming for the Olympics. And then finally, aim to do your best. Chris, Daniel, and Sean shoot recurve, the only type of archery that is an Olympic sport. They use a recurve bow specifically designed for Olympic competitions, and they can't use a scope for anything to help them line up the target. The guides give some tips for doing your best in archery. Number one, focus on the process, not the result. If you're focused on what you're doing, the arrow will end up right down at the target. Don't rush it. If you try to rush to get to the competitive level, you may not make it. Archery is all about consistency. That takes time. There's no substitute for hard work. If it's raining and you don't want to shoot, do it anyway. In a tournament, you may have to shoot in the rain. Well, now let's go right to think and grin. Our first one, from Ashwin Balani in Morris Plains, New Jersey. Jacob, what do road crews use at the North Pole? Jason, I don't know. Jacob, snow cones. Okay. Tom Swifty, use your own toothbrush. Tom bristled, from L.J. Rod in Coppell, Texas. A book never written, Mathematics Made Easy by Calculator. All right. Good job. From Kevin Lamb in Avon, Minnesota. From Kevin Gain in Aston, Pennsylvania, he says, Kevin, how does a chicken keep a beat? Devin, I don't know. Kevin, with its drumsticks. All right. Peter, what has a nose and flies but can't smell? Elaine, I haven't a clue. Peter, an airplane. Peter Savatius in Worcester, Mass. Kayla, what happens when you have a pig that knows martial arts? Jonathan, I have no clue. Kayla, you get pork chops. That's from Jonathan Melvin in Little Mountain, South Carolina. A book never written, Annoying Kids by Ira Tate. And that's from Mike Moretta in Bedford, New York. Warp Wise Man wonders, why is the third hand on a watch called the second hand? And that's from Benjamin Saput in Oswego, Illinois. A book never written, It's Not My Fault by Indy Nile. That's from Jonathan Town in Bristow, Virginia. And here's Pedro's pick. Nick, did you hear about the celery that got arrested? Noah. No, I didn't. Nick, yeah, it was accused of stalking. Well, that paid Nick. Nick needs $10 from Peru, Illinois. Mason, want to hear a farmer joke? Ryan, yeah, hit me with it. Mason, sorry, it's way too corny. And that's from Mason Maslanka in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Tom, knock, knock. Stephen, who's there? Tom, I ran. Stephen, I ran who? Tom, I ran off when I realized this was the wrong house. And that's from Thomas Lamb in Wilmington, Delaware. A book never written, Bouncing Off Objects by Rick A. Shea. That's from Alexander Dickerson in Minster, Ohio. Tom Swifty, stop clanging those cymbals, Tom said bashfully. From Mason Meslanka in Grand Rapids, Michigan. A book never written, Flying for Beginners by Landon Safely. And that's from Alexander Dickerson in Minster, Ohio. Star Scout, in what month do trees fall? Tenderfoot, I don't know. Star Scout, September. And that's from Jonathan Town in Bristow, Virginia. A book never written, What Usually Happens by General Lee. And that's from Nicholas Gant in South Range, Wisconsin. Well, that's about all we have time for. Today's reading of Boys Life Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So long, until next time.